Los Angeles. You're now tuned into Slauson Girl Speaks
with award-winning journalist and South Central native, Slauson Girl.
This is a safe space.
Yeah!
Celebrating authentic black expression.
Where Slauson Girl dives deep
into Los Angeles history,
politics, and news.
While discussing culture, race, and identity with carefully curated guests
to keep you open-minded in today's society.
No cap.
Follow Slauson Girl on all social media platforms and stream Slauson Girl Speaks on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
You don't want to miss this.
Agent Sonny Jones. If you need a home, call Sonny Jones. She can help you buy or sell your home. Luxury or income property. Agent Sunny is the one that you want to see.
Hi, I'm Sunny Jones, your community real estate partner. Real estate ownership is key to building generational wealth, and it matters who you work with. Whether you're buying or selling, I am here to help you win. Let's chat. You can find me at agentsunnyjones.com, Facebook and Instagram, or by text 323-793-7651. If you need a home, call Sunny Jones. 323-793-7651.
So when you need a home, call Sunny Jones. When you need a home, call Sunny.
I do understand the problems that a lot of black entrepreneurs are having, but I also know that there's resources out there. And if I can just, you know, show them where it's at, you know, I'm doing my job.
Well, I am definitely glad that Vermont Slauson has been a resource to you guys in the Murr Party.
You know, a lot of these organizations, including ours at a certain point, we have these ambitious goals, right? Yeah. And then sometimes we can talk it, you know what I'm saying? And but when it comes to the curriculum and really figuring out, honing in on what the actual needs are to the actual cohorts, sometimes we don't get it the first time. You know what I'm saying? And it's possible that that did take place, you know, and one of the things I learned early on is that we're not tooled to actually provide everything. Sometimes we have to go out and we have to delegate with those who do know how to do the work.
Right.
And that's one thing I could say Vermont Slauson has figured out. By coming to organizations like ours and going to Jen with Black Woman Vin, and who know exactly what the needs are of her constituents. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So, we had to figure that out, and I'm sure they figured it out too, which is why we're in partnership now.
Definitely. Well, I just, you know, for these organizations that have been around 10 plus years since the 70s and the 80s, and you're anchored right in the heart of the inner city. I have very little patience for cutting that type of slack. For these newer organizations, definitely. You know, just starting out, you know, trying to work through different issues, delegating tasks, right? But again, like a lot of the money doesn't come to the people in the community. It goes to the organizations. And the organizations are supposed to be helping to fix whatever area of focus, right?
Yeah, I had a conversation. I'm sorry. A conversation with Maxine Waters. And she said, you know, when we go to the feds and we go to these banks and we get this money to try and assist these businesses and things of that nature, she said, our goal wasn't to pay salaries. That money was supposed to go directly into the pockets of the people who need it most. And she said, if I can have my way, I'll create facilities where we could just give out the checks. We're not asking you to create your fantasy of what the curriculum should look like before you give the money. We're asking you, once these people qualify for this money, you give it to them and not waste their time and figure out ways how you can milk the budget before you know, and then give them crumbs on the table.
Right.
And that's when she said that, I was like, yeah, she gets it. You know, when Wells Fargo gave us $2.5 million to purchase the building, you know, she pulled me to the side. She said, that's cute. You know what I'm saying? But they told the United States government that they was going to be giving billions into our community. And we need that. You know what I'm saying? So I'm still going to Congress and we're going to talk about it even more. That was cute that they did that. That's beautiful. I appreciate them.
Appreciate
but that ain't enough.
Bank of America, mm-hmm. we coming to get the check.
Yeah.
You feel me?
Yeah, it's necessary.
Because, yeah, mm-hmm. you know, during George Floyd, we saw a lot of these corporations do these pledges mm-hmm. and saying that they were pledging all of this money to, like, mm-hmm. support the Black community. And a lot of corporations did dump money, mm-hmm. actually. They dumped yeah. it specifically.
I mean, Wells Fargo, for instance, I mean, they did a lot, man. They changed the regime. Mm-hmm. The leads are all people of color, and they're pushing the hard line. I've met with them. They're doing their thing, man. They're doing their thing. You got to commend them when people change. You know, people looked at me as a guy who's coming out of prison. You know what I'm saying? Got a shaky background. You know what I'm saying? But I've made the changes, and people have given me given me the opportunity to grow. And I think in this case, I don't care if it's a corporation or not, when you see that they're making the steps forward, man, you got to give them an opportunity to show you that they mean what they say.
True.
Mm-hmm.
That is true. So speaking of, you know, Wells Fargo and, mm-hmm. you know, the millions for, they helped to support the purchase of mm-hmm. the building mm-hmm. that you and several other Black business owners mm-hmm. operate their businesses out of.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about that purchase, you know, like historic, right? It's basically like, you know, kind of like, okay, I'm not going to say reparations, but like, you know.
It's definitely reparations.
A small tidbit, right?
Yeah.
And so yes, let's talk about that. How did this purchase come about? And what were kind of like the moving pieces? You know, I know it was a lot. So, mm-hmm. you know, we don't have to go like all super in-depth.
Yeah.
But just what were some of the major moving pieces that had to be handled for the deal to successfully go through?
Yeah, man, you know. Purchasing the building was a big deal. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, we had a lot of activity in the Murr Park. You know, we did a lot of activations. The community was vibrant. People were successful in that during those times, you know, opposed to how other communities were thriving at that point. Mm-hmm. And to make a long story short, a lot that activity brought in a lot of developers who were kind of circling the waters, kind of like paying attention to see what was really going to go down. And we saw that there was a possibility that these buildings was going to get taken from us. You know what I'm saying? And if it's taken from the community, that means there's new ownership. New ownership has the opportunity to put in whatever business they see fit, you know, and 80% of the businesses in Lemur Park at that time didn't have leases. I was the only one that had like a really long lease. I had like a 7-year lease with a 7-year option. And, but my neighbors, they were on month to months, which means at any point the ownership came in and said, all right, you guys got 30 days to get up out of here and it's a wrap. And this was during Juneteenth. And I was just looking at, we was revving up for this excitement of how great the space was going to be for Juneteenth. And I just knew that was just another element that was going to bring forth the sharks that are in the water waiting to come and take what we have. And I remember that Tony and I, we were kind of in conflict during that time. Tony is the owner of Hot and Cool. And we were in conflict during that time, just being, you know, just some crabs in the barrel bullshit that we were going through, like just trying to figure out sponsorship and who should be the leads and all this kind of weirdness that we were going through.
And male stuff.
human stuff more than anything, you know. And, you know, we were dealing with that. And at a certain point, we were just like talking about June 19th. And he was like, so when, what are we going to do? I said, we need to be concentrating on June 20th. He was like, what's happening June 20th? And I was like, that's when we set forth to buy this building. He was like, he's going to sell the building? You know about that? I say, nah, but he's going to sell the building, man. This dude, that's how he built. He's about building
profit.
Something and profiting off it. And right now, like we're building something for him and he's going to profit off it. You know what I'm saying? We need to be figuring out how we're going to do this. Make a long story short, man, we decided at that moment to truce and come together and try and get the other members of the build of this complex to come together to buy the building. And we start having all these meetings and talking about it. And at a certain point, I was like, fuck that. We need to, you know, create some documents and send them to people. And they're going to have to sign that they want to be a part of it. They don't want to be a part of it. They want to support all these different things. So I sent it to everybody. And believe it or not, we got some responses back from people that said they didn't want to be a part of ownership. And I was like, I didn't understand that. Why wouldn't you want to own? I mean, SO1 case, now it makes sense. They wanted to retire. They didn't want to have anything to do with that space anymore. Then there was some people who was just like, my board won't allow it.
And that was at SO1 Books?
SO1 Books. Yeah, yeah. They didn't. They just didn't want to have anything to do with the space after January 1. They was just done no matter who owns it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, cool. Even though we fought hard to try to keep them there, even by offering them free rent. If we, by chance, we bought the building, because we just knew that there was staple in the community. Right. We had Holly Mitchell, different politicians. I had every politician in our community come and talk to them to try and get them to stay. It was just like, I want to see another book. But to make a long story short, we finally came together. Four business owners said we want to get it. And that was Dr. Dove from CORE. He does the MLK parade. And then it was Tony, A Day, and myself.
And A Day is from?
A Day is from Ride On Bike Shop. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we tried to do it. We talked to Sika. We talked to Queen Amina, Sika, and Queen Amina. We talked to them about it. And it was just like, y'all brothers need to make it happen. You got our support. You have the support of the Merchant Association. And we started making phone calls. And my first phone call was to Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo thought it was a great idea. It fit some of their initiatives. They told me they can't promise me anything, but they think they got a deal for me. And about a week later, I got another phone call and said, hey, I think I got $2.5 million for you. Don't say nothing yet, but I think I got that. Another week later, got a phone call and said, boom, got the 2.5. You got to raise the rest, but you need us on any calls to help you out. We're going to do it. And then we connected with an organization called Genesis and SNAP Foundation and several others. And we were eventually able to purchase the building through the help of the second district, Holly Mitchell. They gave us our last $2 million that we needed. And
through an initiative to fund or to help mm-hmm. businesses that are have been renting to own their mm-hmm. property.
Own their property. And they chose our Community Land Trust, which is an organization I developed while I was in prison in 2017. And that's what we did.
So when you first got the idea that, you know, you guys should push forward to purchase this building, did you have any idea about where the funding would come from?
Nah, man, I just knew the climate, right? And I just knew
timing,
and I just knew that it's needed. And I know that I knew where the resources were. I knew that it was a possibility. I knew that what I was doing, what my plan was, wasn't traditional in the sense it's not about low income housing. You know, it's not about people being poor. You know what I'm saying? So it wasn't one of those things. It was about Black wealth. And so it was like, how are you going to respond? How are they going to respond to the fact that we saying that we want to be wealthy in mm-hmm. our own community, that we want legacy in our own community? We want to pass this on, right? We want everybody to eat, right? Because if everybody eating, we don't care who's coming in to purchase, I mean, to buy property and what their rent is, because we'll be able to afford it, right? So I just felt as though if we created a land trust that's dedicated to entrepreneurs, meaning that it's going to be a commercial, affordable space, you know, that means we will be able to incubate a bunch of businesses who don't have to worry about spending 60% of their net income on rent. That money could go towards paying your employees a living wage, buying the proper, products to meet the taste level of your community. We are in the largest concentration of Black millionaires in Los Angeles. You know what I'm saying? Those people from the hills, they're tired of going these other places. They want quality merchandise in their neighborhood. They want quality food in their neighborhood. And why not give our entrepreneurs the leg up, meaning they don't have to pay extraordinary amounts of rent, but they can pick the best quality product into their place, you know? And that's what we're doing. That's the plan. The plan is to redevelop that space with the help of the community and provide a beautiful location for everybody in the community to enjoy.
Yeah. And so the building's going to be redeveloped. Mm-hmm. And are you still working with the same contractor ladies?
Yeah. Still Black-owned contractors and developers. Right now, we've met with Lacey to make sure that everything is clean. There's a Black HVAC company that we're going to be trying to partner with.
I think you need to get them in contact with Dr. Umar. No, actually, I think he got the HVAC, actually.
Mm-hmm. Wait, with Dr. who?
I'm just joking. Dr. Umar.
He does HVAC? Oh, okay. That's a whole
nother thing. Because, you know, he's opening a school, but I think he got the HVAC in, but he was always talking about, I need to find the HVAC people.
Where is he building the school at?
Delaware? Somewhere in the cut. But I think he's good, though. I think he's good on the HVAC, and now he just has his other hurdles.
HVAC is a big issue. Like, I'm having an HVAC system issue at the Crenshaw Mall. You know, HVAC is a problem because you got to bring that clean air. You got to make sure that it's air conditioned and heated. Those are huge hurdles, man. And now this is a Black-owned company that specifically works for organizations like Umar's, organizations like ours, to provide, you know, adequate HVAC and electric, clean, free, you know, energy free. I mean, I'm sorry, like off-grid HVAC systems.
Off-grid?
Off-grid, meaning that...
That solar panel?
It's solar. There's all kind of different things. Yeah, it's dope.
Okay, That's what's up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, going to redevelop the building, make it into just, you know, an attractive... building that fits within Leimert Park. Mm-hmm. You're gonna have the Vision Theater that's gonna be opening, I don't know when, but eventually, right?
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
it's gonna be a lot of different foot traffic coming through Leimert Park. You also have the train that just opened on Crenshaw, right by your businesses, by Taco Mel and all mm-hmm. that, you know? And so, you know, there's a lot of pushback in terms of like gentrification, you know, in LA. And Black people feeling like, you know, we're being pushed out mm-hmm. and these developments are coming into the community and we're unable to benefit because we're being priced out and things like that, right?
Yeah.
But you're on the flip side as a business owner mm-hmm. and somebody that politicians and people view as a stakeholder, right? Mm-hmm. Because you operate a business. And
wow.
so... How is it being on the other side as a Black man who is looking to benefit from, you know, all of the different developments and just changes that's happening specifically within Black Los Angeles, the Crenshaw District, Leimert Park?
Yeah, man, I see it as a plus. I see it as a possible, I see a Black Mecca evolving out of this, you know. For me, you know, the only time we get to see our people in full color, that means from every status, is during these festivals like Juneteenth and some of the art walks. You get to see them all there. And a lot of these people, they come from like Ohio, Chicago and all these different places, and they're not really sure about what happens in Leimert Park. It's their first time really coming in. They came in, they got an apartment in downtown LA, they got an apartment in the Valley, and they didn't know that this was this tight-knit art community right there. And I just think by having, like you said, this train, having the theater, I think those people are going to come and they're going to see, they're going to purchase, they're going to rent, they're going to support, and they're going to activate, you know? And I think those things are necessary because that theater is going to, I don't know how many jobs it's going to bring, but it's going to bring a lot. I know the train has brought a lot of jobs. I know a lot of people that I've seen that were formerly homeless. They're now as walking around the community in their vests as ambassadors with a place to stay doing what they need to do, right? I believe if people was able to receive the resources like employment and housing, because there's going to be some affordable housing in those areas. I think those are going to be the first people in line, just like MTA has shown us with these people. You know, they were the first in line to get a job. You know, Chrysalis, they came in because now we got new people doing the bid in Leimert Park, meaning that to take care of the community. And a lot of the people from our community was the first to get those jobs. So I think as this community develop, as our leadership, you know, because we lost like our leadership in CD10 is, you know, we don't know what's happening. You know, who
right.
knows what happens with MRT case. If he gets exonerated, you know, will he be back? Are we going to be
yes.
going through a phase of, you know, who's going to be at the seat again. So right now we're just trying to do what we can do in Leimert Park through my organization, Black Owned and Operated. We started a community kind of charrette, so to speak, every first Monday or whatever. I bring in all the municipalities, everything from sanitation to the police department, to come in and speak to the community, which includes people that they would normally be able to sit next to and have a civilized conversation without a bunch of yelling. And right now, you know, we're focusing on solution-based issues, and it's been pretty good. And so I see that the changes are happening. People are on alert, and right now we're trying to create the mechanisms to make sure that our people aren't pushed out, to make sure that we're at the helm of the ship. You know, one of my big goals, it's probably my first time really saying it publicly, is to turn that area into the Black Arts District, right? And if we turn that into the Black Arts District, into a cultural district, then we're opening ourselves up to, you know, the dollars from the federal dollars that's necessary to preserve the cultural relevance of that community, right? We're talking about changing the light poles to where you know you're in the Black Arts District, making sure that there's the proper festivals and the galleries and the funding to support the Black artists of that community. You know, we just opened the Soul Folks Art Lab. Well, we didn't open it. We did a soft opening this weekend just to show people what it is and to go back and forth with the artists of our community to find out what resources we need to bring to the table. We brought in schools like Art Center, Otis, to come in to actually provide their services, meaning they're going to be bringing their teachers, they're going to be providing equipment, and in some cases, they're going to be leasing space in the new building that we're going to be erecting in Leimert Park to actually give free courses to the people in that community to help them with their portfolios, give them scholarships. You know, because these artists need to know that it's not only just painting on a canvas. You guys can take this art and become work in advertisement, work in sculpturing, like model making, and on and on and on. So, you know, the plan is to create intellectual property factories all throughout our community. And that's why it's important to turn it to the Black Arts District so we can pay homage to those that came before us and to make sure that the future young artists in our community have the necessary resources, man, to build their community instead of thinking they got to go to Santa Monica, Melrose, downtown LA. They can actually build right there in South LA.
It's super powerful.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's a long answer to a short question.
No, that's, I'm pretty sure that, you know, you could go even more in depth with that, you know, but I do appreciate that. I do want to ask you, you know, Wells Fargo and them ain't just gonna, you know, give just any Black person money to, you know, purchase their building, you know? And a lot of Black people have a hard time when it comes to like getting those resources, you know, even Black people that have been in business for a minute, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I just wanted to ask you, you know, how do I frame this? So let's see, like in terms of like leveraging your business or your, what you're doing as a Black person, how can you leverage that to advocate and demand those necessary resources that you need to get you where you need to go, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like how have you been able to leverage yourself as a business owner to getting what you need, you know?
I think with the funds that we received from Wells Fargo, I didn't get it. We got it, right?
Yes, we.
And I think I didn't say that to correct you either. I'm just saying that to say, you know, we got it, and it was the collective, and it was the mission of the collective, and we just was in alignment with an initiative that they wanted to be a part of in that case, right? And it's very important for us to go out and find those. I didn't just go out and just petition them willy-nilly. I knew that this is something that they planned on doing. You know, I heard through the grapevine that they're interested in assisting these type of things.
So you got to be up on what's going on.
You got to be up on it. You got to be up on it. And you have to also, man, like, you know, like these are solid businesses, man. We have the world stage inside of that space. I mean, yes. This is a art mecca, right? Then we have SO1 Bookstore. I mean, even though they wasn't a part of the purchase, they didn't want to be a part of the purchase, but what they brought to that community is invaluable, right? And to be able to make sure that this place has a place to stay if they chose to. And then, you know, Hot and Cool. I mean, it's not only a coffee house, like you said, it's a community center. You know, so, and then so folks, what we brought to the table for so many Black entrepreneurs, you know, it's like we couldn't lose that, you know, and I've developed a relationship with an organization like the one you mentioned, Wells Fargo, by creating financial literacy programs, making it cool, making it hip for young people to want to figure out how to save money for their businesses. So, yeah, man, like I said, for me, it's always glass half full. And if somebody is doing something, I don't bite my tongue. You know what I'm saying? I'm going up in there and I'm pushing the hard line, and I'm not just it's a lot of checks we turn down. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot of checks we turn down, you know? And, yeah, you just gotta be, you gotta be purposeful, man. And you gotta make sure that, you know, we got an answer to that, you know? And that's it. So I think I answered your question, maybe.
Yeah, and I appreciate, you know, mm-hmm. the we. Mm-hmm. And basically it sounds like it's, if you're able to leverage the collective.
That's what it is.
You know, there's power in numbers, mm-hmm. right? So so basically, Wells Fargo won't give individual Black people money, but basically, you're able to leverage the collective and the history of, you know, those businesses that have been anchored in Leimert Park, in addition to the work that you are doing with Soul mm-hmm. Folks.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to briefly touch on, you know, recidivism mm-hmm. in the Black community for Black men, especially is really high. Black men come out of prison. There's not really... you know, the proper structure to get them re-acclimated back into society, you know. You know, not all Black men come out of prison and they're lost. You know, there are some success stories. But it just seems like the majority of Black men who have been to prison have a hard time finding their way when they get out of prison. How do you think that you've been able to, you know, go from prison to establishing yourself as like an influential businessman in LA?
I'm gonna say this. When I was in prison, when a lot of young people, some older brothers found out that I had businesses before I came in, they all came to me. You know, a lot of them would come to me and be like, yo, check this out, this is what I'm thinking. And then after a while, I ended up writing a book called, I think it was Secrets to A1 Credit Simplified. And then I wrote another one book called Entrepreneur's Guide to the Money. And I don't know which one I wrote first, but the key was basically I was having all these silo conversations. I just wanted them to get a book, right? Get the basics, and then we could sit down and talk. I became the law library clerk, which is like the secretary of the library. And so I started doing my own classes inside of there. And I kept telling them, this is what you do, this is how you do it, blah, 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 that the money and the resources is there. And I would get a lot of naysaying, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, right. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay. And so I was just hell bent when I came home is to show them, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? Those who probably still in there, people who are coming home, that you can actually do this shit for real. Like, I didn't write this shit for nothing.
Oh, wow.
And so I went and I came out to do that, right? And at a certain point, you know, I was an anger management like a counselor. I did anger management, I did domestic violence classes, and I did criminal thinking, right? And just by being sit next to all these young these people and just talking to them about what their issues are and shit like that, I just started seeing a particular pattern. And I was just like, man, you know, at a certain point, like, how many times have you been here type stuff? Like, what was the crime? And like, just talking to them, and I'm just like, you know, and what's gonna change? that course. And then when I talk to people who are successful, you know, and just dealing with the pitfalls of parole and getting caught up on that, even though they're on the right path, I start to see what their angles were that kept them on the right path. A lot of people were getting good jobs and they were just leaving outside of the zone because they didn't want to lose their job, and they were truckers and they were coming in. So I was just trying to see what the resources are that are around. And then I started thinking, like, you know, like recidivism is a good thing. There's a lot of organizations for that. But I think I want to concentrate on the younger people, right? I want to concentrate on young people before they get the opportunity to make the wrong fork in the road. Mm. And so I wanted to create space for them, the creatives, the young ones who are, if they knew better, they would do better, right? And if we show them how to, you know, I used to tell them all the time when I was in that scene, nigga, if I went outside right now, I'll have a store within a certain amount of time, because the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go buy some socks. I'm going to buy some drawers.
Okay, Nipsey Hussle and Black Sam.
No question. And I'm going to barbershops, and I'm stacking and stacking and stacking and stacking. And I'm going to utilize all the resources parole has for me, and I'm going to be on their ass all the time for all of the things that they have to give me until they kick me off of parole. And it was just like, yeah, whatever. I happened to get a cool little opportunity to do Airbnb. That's the first thing. When I came out, the first thing I did was I looked at the terrain. I was like, okay, so this is what I can do. And so I started with my Airbnbs, and I stood in my parole officer's face, letting them know, showing them all my new certificates, all the things that I'm doing. They got me off of parole 2 years early, right? Once I was off parole, it was a wrap. Then I was able to do all the great things that I could come up with in my brain. And so I started doing club promotions. I started doing all kind of shit. And then once I was able to develop and raise a little money to get first and last on the space, I opened it up because I knew that I'm pretty good at interior design. So once I make a beautiful space in a nice area, it's easy for me to go and communicate with designers to get them to put their product in. And we could split the pie. I don't care how much money I make off it. As long as it looks good, eventually I'll be able to afford to buy my own product and create a name for myself, which is Soul Folks. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I just imagined it. But I came from a place of no fear. Like I said, my first business was at 19. I've opened up restaurants, coffee houses, clothing stores. I understood it. So it was easy for me to come out and it looks like I'm standing on my feet. But it's kind of hard for somebody who's been selling dope, who's been pimping, who's been doing all these different things to jump into a new area because their safety net is not business. It's not retail. It's not paying rent to somebody and hiring employees. It's this other thing. Mm-hmm. So how do you get them out of that, right? And that's the thing that, you know, I'm figuring out, because everybody I know want to be an entrepreneur in prison. They don't want to work for nobody. You know, it takes a lot of balls to go out and do the things that these people are doing. You know what I'm saying? It takes a lot of balls to be an entrepreneur. It's that same energy, you know, it's that fearlessness. And so, like, my goal was to figure out mechanism, one, for the young people, and two, for those who are ready to come out and make it happen. And that's what we're doing. And the art lab is the space. You know, I was able to go to the Crenshaw Mall and talk to the owners of that property and say, listen, man, you got to include the community. You're going to have to do something.
Who owns that space?
David Schwartzman.
So the Schwartz Bank, is it the Deutsche Bank people?
It's I'm not sure about the banking company, but I know, okay, David Schwartzman is the lead owner of the property at the Crenshaw Mall, the same mall that people were trying to purchase.
Buy.
And it said that the community had more money. I'm not sure the accuracy of that, but I do know that for me, I always, when I know there's an issue and there's a problem, I go and talk to the source and find out, mm-hmm, what's going on. I also like when the source is in a position like he was in, you know what I'm saying? And I went there and I gave him like a, you know, a pretty decent plan that's fair exchange, no robbery for the both of us. Mm-hmm. For me, it would be space to provide opportunities for the young people in our community. And for him, it would be a tax return. I mean, I'm sorry, a tax write-off. Mm-hmm. I don't know why my phone is going crazy.
They're trying to reach you. You need a second?
Yeah, it's all different people. A tax write-off for providing space for a nonprofit. And, you know, I can't even say reluctantly he did it. I mean, he actually was really involved in it. You know, he just has this thing about being used, and he also has this thing about false narratives. You know what I'm saying? He was just like, you know, I just want people to know that I'm not here to fuck this thing up. You know, he talks really, you know, wow. And he was like, I really want to work with more people in the community, but because of this press, he doesn't get a chance to.
Yeah,
and I was like, yeah, that sounds good, man.
But right, exactly.
What exactly are you trying to do? And then he started talking about all the initiatives, the money he's giving. I say, money just don't do it sometimes, man. You're going to have to do more, man. You have to do more. And so now he has this Jason Lombard, which is one of the guys that's handling it from the ownership side. His brother, his dad worked with Magic Johnson, with the Magic Johnson Theater. And so that team gets it. You know what I'm saying? And they were pivotal in making sure that we got that space. You know, because, I mean, who are you going to talk to? I mean, he doesn't really have ears in the community. So he can only go to the people that he's associated with to find out what we're doing.
Right.
And to make a long story short, man, we got the space. We got a 20,000 square foot space, man, where we're providing everything from like photography studio to a lot of what you see here at Color Compton. That's the name of the organization. Yeah. There's a lot of what you see here, man. We just did a big event this weekend where we had a lot of city officials come through, a lot of institutions and organizations come through to kind of see what we have going on, but mostly to talk to the community about what it is we're planning on doing, and also to see what we can add to through the suggestion of our community members.
Well, that's amazing. You know, kudos to you. Mm-hmm. And I'm definitely trying to get on your level of negotiating, you feel me?
Mm-hmm.
And sidebar, I definitely hope, again, you know, that mm-hmm. there's some collaboration room for, you know, Color Compton and Soul Folks, again, intersections
definitely.
With the work, you know.
Definitely.
And these are some young people that have way less resources, but they were able to get a space, you know, mm-hmm. and maintain it and mm-hmm. grow it, you know.
Right.
And so definitely, you know, kudos to Color Compton and Soul Folks.
Mm-hmm.
So I do want to ask you, you know, for Black men that are coming out of prison that do want to do something different, that don't want to fall into the same pitfalls, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are some tips that you would give them on, you know, navigating after they're released from prison?
Yeah, man, the first thing I would do, man, is I would really go to my parole officer, man, and like really ask them about all the necessary all the resources they have available. There's a fund that's set aside for every man and woman that come out of prison. And they actually don't get a chance to tap into it because we look at these parole officers as our
overseer.
Our overseer as opposed to our resource. And because of that fear that they can smell on you, you know what I'm saying? They tend to utilize it to lighten their caseload. I didn't have no fear because you're never gonna get a dirty piss test on me. You're never gonna get come see me behind somebody's glass talking about, look at you, I fucked up again. That's not happening. So I came in there with a different energy. You know what I'm saying? So I'm going over there knocking on the door like, oh, you know what's happening? I'm trying to set up appointments. I'm saying, yo, come over here. I want you to see where I'm staying because I want you to see how I'm living. Like, you know, I want you to treat me the way you spoke, like the way it's written in the book. You know what I'm saying? Like, I need transportation. I need clothing. I need housing. I need all of these things. Like, you're going to give me this. You know what I'm saying? And and that's what I did. That's what I did. And the more you do that, one, you do two things. You get the necessary resources that you need. Two, you get on their nerves to the point to where they try and figure out how they can get you off their caseload. Unfortunately, if you're out there you're working on both sides of the law, that could be triggering because then they want to investigate you more because they know you're effing up. And they're like, oh, let's get this guy off my caseload. Let's get this girl off my caseload. But for me and other people who want to do the right thing, you know, it's important to bug them. But then there's organizations like ARC, mm-hmm. Anti-Recidivism Coalition, mm-hmm. organization founded by a guy by the name of Scott Butnick and Prophet Walker. That organization.
I didn't know Prophet Walker was a co-founder.
Yeah, he's a co-founder. You know, Prophet is also formerly incarcerated.
Mm-hmm.
Prophet is also out of this area, Compton Watts area. He went to prison for assault. And as a juvenile, I think 16, 17 years old, something like that. And he had to go to an adult prison at that young age. And at that point, he wrote and he met Scott Butnick and he created the program Anti-Recidivism Coalition.
Oh, wow. Well, I totally missed that. Why isn't he more like in the forefront of it?
You know, I mean, I'm not going to be in the forefront of black owned and operated or soul folks in a couple of years. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to be doing the things that I want to do. You know, I'm going to evolve and probably move more into development, creating other nonprofit organizations. So, I mean, it's about building it and watching it blossom. He did that. You know what I'm saying? And when it's under the particular leadership and you're just on the board, you know, you go in and you just make sure it's good. You smile and you walk away because you did your job. You know, so that's the ultimate goal, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
And so one last question about prison, it would be, you know, I just have to ask you, you know?
But, that's not hard at all. I love talking about prison. If I wouldn't have went to prison, I probably wouldn't be here right now. And I'm not saying dead. I just would, I would be somewhere else because my mindset was about, it was really capitalistic. My mindset was really, it wasn't about the south side of Wilshire. You know what I'm saying? I just wanted to be rich. I wanted to live in the hills. I wanted to look like my friends. You know what I'm saying? I wanted to travel. I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be doing none of the work that I did. And so I had to sit down. It took me about 6 years of incarceration before I realized what my mission was and why I needed to be in that place for that moment in time to figure out what I need to do when I come home. You know, so nah, prison wasn't. You know, and then, you know, when they say God don't give you something you can't handle. I mean, it took me 10 years to realize that I was in prison for 10 years. Like, I didn't know, like, my time was going by so fucking fast. I didn't find out that it's 10 years until I was talking to an ex-girlfriend on the phone and her son came up in there and it sounded like a grown ass man. And I was like, who's that? He was like, that's Jada. He was like, hello? I was like, what the fuck? It ruined me for at least, I was probably sick for like 2 months. Like, yo, it's been that long. Like, I had no idea.
Like, the kids was growing up?
The kids grew up. That was my, my thing of time. But at that point, that's when it triggered me to really start concentrating on what I'm going to do when I got home. Mm-hmm. And then my partner, Taz Arnold, you know, I talked to him and he was doing all these amazing things with Kanye and all this shit. And he was like, yo, don't worry about nothing, bro. Like, there's a lot of people still in the same space. And like what you're doing in here is probably even more than what people are doing on the street. And what you're going to be doing when you get home, don't even worry about it, brother. You're like ahead of your time. And that gave me solace, but it also gave me fire to be ready. So when I hit the streets, you know, if I could talk to anybody who's incarcerated, it's like what you practice in there is what you're going to do here. You know what I'm saying? If your mantra is building whatever it is, a relationship with your child, if it's a relationship with business and wealth, or if it's a relationship with your spirituality, what you do there, you're going to do 10 times more here when you got that freedom. So start operating on your life plan from where you are, because that's the only time you're going to have that kind of space and clarity.
What would you say was like one of the biggest mistakes that you had made that led you there?
Not understanding the power of karma, right? I think karma, when you really understand the science of it, and like a lot of people think karma is also just like retribution and something bad. I learned that karma is, you have good karma too. Like what you put out there in the universe is what you get back, period. And there's nothing around that, you know. And I tell people my karma cup is good. You know what I'm saying? If I do something I ain't got no business doing, even in this day and time, like if something is going to come back to me immediately, quick, which I'm happy about. What I was doing is I just was so good at fucking criminality. You know what I'm saying? I never got caught. You know what I'm saying? I just never got caught. And because of that, when I finally did get caught doing something, they threw the book at me. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like I did 15 years. Not only did I do 15 years, they labeled it a violent offense. You know what I'm saying? And nobody ever got touched. I never harmed nobody. I was shaking people's hands coming in and coming out. You know what I'm saying? But that's how the universe have a way of getting your ass. You know what I'm saying? And getting your attention. You know, and so to answer your question, you know, I just start trying to give as much good, more good than what I could ever do bad. You know what I'm saying? And because of that, all of these things that looks like I'm seems like I'm masterfully doing, it's karma. It's karma, and it's because I'm doing something beyond, it's beyond me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not rich, but I don't have a lot of money. Yes, we bought a $6.5 million building. You know what I'm saying? But I'm not even on salary. My staff is on salary. You know what I'm saying? I think that my company got IOUs for me. I'm still fundraising for my rate, whatever that my board decides I need to be getting paid. You know what I'm saying? And that's all right for me because I know there's greater later. If something happened to me today or tomorrow, I know that we've created the operational structure to build for years to come. You know what I'm saying? And that's the great thing about what's happening. So what I did in the past, and the people I've harmed, you know what I'm saying? Like I said, it took me 6 years for me to actually recognize why I was in prison. I was so busy worrying about how there was injustice in the criminal justice system, which there is, but I was so busy worried about that. I wasn't really concentrating on the people that I actually harmed. I wasn't really concentrating on the damage that it put on my family and my friends and the embarrassment. You know, I mean, not only did I get 15 years in prison, I had the audacity to escape. You know what I'm saying? Like, 2 weeks after they sentenced me, I escaped and went to Mexico, which means that I was all over the news and all kind of shit. You know what I'm saying? So it was just like, no, at every step of the way, I wasn't giving up. It's like, and
this guy got a lifetime movie story.
It seems like, huh? But yeah. So it was like, at a certain point, I just had to realize and just relax and just listen. Mm-hmm. Just relax and listen. Figure out what it is. You can't keep trying to. I took my case all the way to the United States Supreme Court, pro per, meaning by myself. You know what I'm saying? Lawyers don't get to the United States Supreme Court. You know, that's Peoples versus West in the United States Supreme Court right now because I was like, fuck y'all. You know what I'm saying? And ultimately, the minute I said, you know what, chill. What are you supposed to be doing? Listen to these kids. Listen to what they need. Figure this shit out. And then that's when Ferguson came and I saw what was happening. I was like, yo, we need to own our own shit. You know what I'm saying? And that's what we're going to do. And so when I found out about a community land trust, I was like, nigga, that's it right there. We can go and get this property from the government. We can make these corporations pay us to buy our own shit. I said, well, that's what we're going to do. And then I was like, I have to create a space in the community. I have to reach these kids where their heart chakra is, which is fashion and shoes. So I came up with Soul Folks, and I was like, the old folks will like it, the young folks will like it. And if I can plant this flag in this beautiful community and then show that we can give when it's time for me to talk about the real shit that my plan is all about, which is ownership and creating grocery stores and all these different things, they're going to listen because they're going to see we've done the good and we kind of dope. And so by the time it was time to ask this question, you know, to Wells Fargo, one of the organizations that seem to have been destroying the community by taking people's homes and, you know, mismanaging people's funds, all this stuff, to finally get a chance to set at their door and knock on their door and say, hey, we could use this. And for them to say yes, I knew that this was bigger than me. You know what I'm saying? So at that point, it's like, if I can think about it, I know we can do it. You know what I'm saying? So that include the mall and 20,000 square foot space, even though people was like, yo, they'll never do that. You know, the cleaners around the corner, I don't even know if you know, but I just signed a lease on the cleaners around the corner, the old Flair's cleaners. We're opening up a grocery store over there and a food hall where we're going to be giving healthy, beautiful foods from different parts of the world, all owned by Black people.
Is that in across from the gate, across from the park?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, well, yeah. Check y'all out. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Definitely. Thank you. Yeah. So what's going on with art practice? Like, I don't ever see it.
Yeah, art practice has always been a sore subject for me. Okay. I remember they did a community, we sent out a message to them about just the gates around the park and security and stuff like that. And saying we was going to have a meeting and somebody had the audacity to ask us what was our agenda. You know, like, I didn't really know standard meeting procedures. You know, I didn't know what they meant by agendas. I know now, you know, let me know the agendas. They say it was innocent. But for me, I had so much angst in me because they were just dormant in our community. You know, they own property in our area. When I say they, I'm talking about Mark Bradford's team. They own property in our area. And I know that the owners in those buildings only have, like, some of them are month to month. Some of the buildings are, you know, not properly kept. And then, some people don't have an opportunity to even forecast what they're going to do in the next 2 years. That's like business 101. You have to forecast, like, we're going to do this, but you can't even do that with a surety when you don't even have a lease. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what are you doing with these other properties? And then I also had a little personal beef with them because I was going to open up, I wanted to open up a space in between Chase and Napoli Naturals. And I put in my lease, my application, and they turned us down. And I had Nika King and Taz Arnold. These people got excellent credit. Mm. A lot of money in the bank. Hey. You know what I'm saying? Like, why are you telling us no?
What did they say?
I mean, they really didn't give us anything, but my fantasy and what I'm hoping is that they always planned on giving it to Napoli Naturals, and they just wanted to see if they were going to be able to be successful long enough to give it to them. That's what I'm thinking now. But then I had angst because I was like, how the fuck? But the way it had it, the late, great Barbara Morrison, she was like, baby, baby, I'm about to leave. You can have this space. I could talk to the owner. He ain't going to do shit for you, but he may give you the spot. And I was like, yeah, call him.
She
put the call in, and 3 days later, I got the keys. But that's how it's supposed to be when it's supposed to be.
Okay.
And because of the space being so big, I was able to do all these other great things that I wouldn't have been able to do.
So you got her old space on the corner too?
No, I just got her space. Remember, I don't know if you remember, but she had Soul Folk space. The Soul Folk space was the, used to be the California Jazz and Blues Museum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Rest in peace, Ms. Morrison.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, and then Flair's Cleaners was also her space. She had that space as well. She actually was going to turn that into the museum eventually. That was her plan. So she was using that storage. And then at a certain point, I needed to house these electric vehicles that I had, these bikes, these pedicab bikes. And she let me put them inside the space. And that's how I got in contact with the owner after she passed. He called me and said, hey, you got this shit in my building. I don't even know who you are. And we end up having a conversation and we end up talking him into let me lease the space for, you know, 10, 20 years.
Yeah, that was definitely, that's historic, you know, because he had that building for a cool minute. Yep. And, you know, yep. Was this the same guy that had the arms dealer business?
No. This is another guy who has a, you know, his relationship to the community is nowhere near the guy who was the arms dealer.
Okay, because that's a separate building, the building.
Yeah, okay. It's a different building. This is the building around the corner that used to be Flair's Cleaners. Right now it's been dormant for about 7 years because they found some toxicity in the soil. Mm. So for the last 4 or 5 years, they've been sucking all that stuff out. And now they're at the point to where the levels are low enough for restaurants, coffee houses, and clothing stores. I mean, restaurants, coffee houses, and grocery stores. And we're going to develop it. And by the time the development is done, it'll be to the point to where people could actually live on it. They cleaned it enough for that. They just now cleaning into the street and making sure all of that stuff is good. But this is what happens. I mean, that's what they had to do for Roscoe's. Remember the Roscoe's that they just opened up over on Washington, the new one? Yeah, that used to be a gas station. So they had to clean that out for a while. So yeah. So that's what you have to do, man. That's what you have to do. And so the building is clean. It's clean to the point to where now it's good for restaurants, and they're still going to be cleaning it for years to come. There are going to be machines on the property that's continuously sucking all the toxins out of the soil. And so that's what we're doing.
Okay. I just have a couple more questions before we close out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when it comes to anything successful in business, there's usually a team of folks that help to keep everything going. The folks behind the scenes, SO folks that have really helped you to get the business where it is today.
Yeah.
I know, like you said, Ferris has like been, you know, really influential. She does like the Come Up LA Marketplace and things like that. But is there also other people that we should know about?
Yeah, man. I mean, Nika King. Nika King is one of our co-founders. Nika mm-hmm. King, people may know her from the hit show Euphoria. She plays Zendaya's mother on that. If it wasn't for Nika, it probably would have never happened. Nika gave me the courage and some of the resources needed to actually start the business to begin with. She encouraged me to be the lead based on my story and my experience and the fact that it was my vision. Even though I thought it, her celebrity, I thought Taz's celebrity, Taz Arnold, he's a Grammy Award winning producer who is a style god. You know what I'm saying? Like Virgil Abloh used to call him and send him photographs of just about everything he's done just to get his take on it. You know what I'm saying? Taz and Kanye back in the day was just like inseparable because of his prowess in fashion. And Taz and I, we grew up in the Lamar Park area. And so we've been friends since we were young. But he came along and became our, what does he call himself? The executive visual officer, some shit like that he came up with, which is dope. And so he's been there just to give us some insight and utilize his resources and his relationship. And so he's pivotal. But today we have another group of individuals, man. We have Robbie, who is he's our COO. We have Kenya, who is like the project manager over at the Art Lab, and she does just strategic partnerships and things of that nature. And then Ferris Mason, you know, can never not give her props. Ferris is the one that when I first started this whole thing, I went to her and said, listen, you know, the same people you have up at Come Up LA Markets, you know what I'm saying? Those people can actually be inside of the store. I would love for you to come in. And because you deal with them, maybe you can help me author this this program to make sure that it's a fair exchange for everybody. And she came in. Not only did she do that, she took my offer to actually manage the retail space. And she's been doing a wonderful job ever since. And so she's been there since the beginning. And then Iman, who was our retail manager. And then we had Pepper, who was really, really, really pivotal in helping us create a particular style and, you know, with the mannequins in the store and shit like that. She's really dope. And we have a lot of other people like Prolific Juice, who's going to be helping us out with our juice bar, making sure that we have all the nutritional desserts and organic what have yous mm-hmm. for the community. Yeah. And Let's Behold. Let's Behold is a organization that we partner with before we even open up the store to give out fresh fruit and vegetables to the community through the Queen Nina. And yeah, man.
No, they be giving out some mm-hmm. some fire, stuff. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, shout out to Let's Behold, definitely. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Especially during the pandemic.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right, Akil. Well, before we close out, and actually my last question. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. Before we close out and actually my last question, how can people find you and support, you know, the work that you all are doing over at Soul Folks?
They can find me through going to Akil is Free on Instagram. Or they can always email me at akil@soulfolks.com. And normally I give people my telephone number. But yeah.
I mean, I know you don't look it, but you know, you mm-hmm. you know, you're...
I'm about to be 50.
What are you eating? Like, what's the diet regime? Like, what is going on?
This is my mama daddy stuff.
Shout out to mom. My diet.
Yeah, it's my mama daddy stuff.
Shout out to mom.
Yeah, moms look like she 45. She's 68.
Wow.
Yeah. She'd be at the store and I'd be telling people, that's my mama. She'd be standing on the counters wiping the ceiling. They'd be like, what the hell? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my mama be. Can't make her get down.
She have a shop or a store?
No, she's when she comes to the store. She comes to the store, she finds something to do. Yeah, she always finds something to do, bringing food for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, my mom's funny. But yeah, I think I get it from my mama. You know, I'm right now I'm vegan. you know, but,
oh, wow.
You know, I'm struggling vegan, you know, I love my cheese. Mm. So that's about it.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you don't eat meat?
No.
Yeah. It's too, it's a lot to process on the body for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, if you want to age well, definitely want to, you know, consider what you're eating. Mm-hmm. And I know vegan lifestyles are really good for, you know, keeping your systems clean and high alkaline diets. So, but yes. Okay, cool. Shout out to y'all. Mm-hmm. So what advice would you give for just Black people in general in Los Angeles when it comes to being an entrepreneur? Just any words of wisdom?
I think just preparedness, man. Just be prepared. You know, like, don't let nobody stop you by telling you why they wouldn't do it. And if you got a bunch of friends who always, every time you bring something up, and they're telling you why they wouldn't do it, or why it won't work, you know what I'm saying? Just kind of stay away from those people. And then, you know, just make educated decisions, man. Always find the proper resource. There's so much information out there, you know? And sometimes, you know, if you can afford it, if you're young, I mean, take that leap of faith. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, one of the things that Taz told me too, that I remember, he was just like, man, you know, Quincy Jones, he didn't become Quincy Jones until he was like 50-something years old. He's done all this work and blah, blah, blah. And he just was going, you know, Russell Simmons, and he was just telling me about all of these older people, which was a little depressing to keep hearing it. Like, you know, you coming home, but you coming home, you still going to be young. You know what I'm saying? And don't worry about it. So what I'm telling these young people, like, it's all right to fail. I mean, right now people see what I'm doing and they consider it success, you know, but I did 15 years in prison, and then I did probably 20 years of, you know, dumb stuff, you know, before I got to a space where I'm able to now figure it out and not play any games. And I'm not playing any games now, man, because I don't have anything else to fall back on. You know what I'm saying? I can't make it. I mean, I have a lot to fall back on, but I don't have anything to fall back on in terms of time. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm about to be 50 years old, so I'm not playing. So I'm making sure that everything is an educated step. And I'm visualizing exactly it is what I want. And when I see glimpses of what it is that's supposed to be on my pathway there, I don't hesitate in making those decisions to move towards it, because I know that that's really what it is I'm supposed to be doing, or what I'm supposed to be partnering with, or the position I'm supposed to be in. And that puts me through what I consider like a wormhole that gets me there faster than I would if I was to be really timid, you know? Just because I visualized it, I wrote it down, I know exactly what my plan is. Like I spoke about earlier, I knew if I set the store in this community and we did the good work, when it's time for us to try and usher the community into what this other plan is, which is purchasing a building, it probably will happen. And now, my plan is to usher the community into turning this area into what it's really supposed to be, which is the Black Arts District. And I know that that's going to happen just like the rest, because I'm not the only one that want it. And that's another thing, man. I'm providing space for like-minded people, and I'm partnering with those people. And it's not just me. And that's another thing. You know, a lot of people always talk about, damn, man, you know, somebody had my idea. And the way I'm learning, man, the universe, those same ideas, it hit a bunch of people at the same time. You know what I'm saying? And when it looks like somebody stole your shit or somebody else got something and you're kind of pushing it away, sometimes they just the test model. You know what I'm saying? So go ahead on and continue moving in your direction, because you may have a different way of achieving that same goal. And then sometimes it's maybe better for you just to tap into that other individual who got a little farther than you, a little faster, so you guys can actually form and you bring in this new element that makes it better. And those are the things that normally happens that are most successful, is when we work collaboratively together, because that's who we are. We're tribal people. And to work together is that's how we unify the mission. And, you know, and anybody in the art of war, because believe it or not, we are at war. You know what I'm saying? It's better when you consolidate your forces and attack the same area. You know what I'm saying? And that's how it works. And that's how we were able to succeed. And that's why Juneteenth works. That's why this is going to work. And that's why this community is going to work better, because now we're going to label that area. We're going to solidify what it's called. We're going to call it the Black Arts District. We're going to design programs and initiatives for the artists in that community. And we're going to elevate the community as a whole. Yeah.
Okay. Well, much respect. Mm-hmm. And just much continued success to everything you all have going on at Soul Folks. And thank you so much for your time. I really do appreciate it.
Yep. All right. Thank you.
Like this episode?
Leave a review and stay up to date on new episodes by subscribing to Sloss and Girl Speaks. And follow Sloss and Girl on Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook.